The following is a Super Spectrum Radio production.
Since 1972, Carl Kolchak has reported on the strange and unusual. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Chicago have been just a few of his beats, with Kolchak continuously finding himself face to face with vampires, werewolves, phantoms, and all manner of creature that goes bump in the night. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and this is the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. So when you have finished this bizarre account, judge for yourself its believability, and then try to tell yourself, wherever you may be, it couldn't happen here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Stevens, and you, the members of the Cult of Kolchak, are in for a treat tonight. Once again, we are joined by new fan to the Night Stalker, Mr. Matt Pierce, who is watching these episodes for the very first time before we record. And this one is a doozy. It is They Have Been, They Are, They Will Be. Or, for those in syndication, it is known as the UFO episode. That's right, we got some alien action tonight on the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. Let's get into it. Episode 3 of Kolchak the Night Stalker originally aired September the 27th, 1974, with the title, They Have Been, They Are, They Will Be. A bizarre force sweeps through Chicago, killing randomly. It has the strength of a hurricane, generates a massive electromagnetic field, steals lead and electronic equipment, and sucks the bone marrow out of humans and animal alike. Carl realizes he's onto a huge story, if he can find out exactly what this force is. And it's a good one, is what it is. So Matt, this was your very first time checking out this episode. What's your initial thoughts? What'd you think about it?
It absolutely threw me for a loop. It didn't follow the formula for the previous episodes or movies where, you know, somebody's walking in an alley and then they get killed by some figure. Mm-hmm. There's no figure. The whole episode is like there's almost an answer, but kind of not. And I really like that kind of thing.
This whole episode could be not a Kolchak episode and just be like a sort of low budget alien flick and be completely fine, because it's just so different.
Yeah,
so good. It's so good.
It's almost weird.
And I'm not even sure if like the overall consensus is that it is a good episode because of those reasons, but I dig it. I like it. I like a little change of pace. I like to see Kolchak thrown off guard a little.
Like, he's comfortable usually with things like vampires and immortal people.
Yes.
And things, but like this is even beyond that.
It's almost intangible and massive. It's something, yep, that he can't physically handle, because he, yep, normally does kill things.
It's true.
So we get into the episode, and in the voiceover itself, Carl talks about this is the biggest story not only of his life, but the biggest story in the lives of everyone on the planet. So from the get-go, you're well aware that something crazy is going on. And then we get to it. Specifically, the Lincoln Park Zoo, September 2nd at 5:30 a.m. Ooh, poor Shenka, the zoo's prize cheetah. We get shots of an animal.
Yeah, a real cheetah.
In full duress.
Yeah.
Circling in its cage, growling, hissing at the camera, freaking out as something is obviously coming for it. And then we flash onto Kolchak. In the newsroom, talks about, you know, it starts on a day that's supposed to be one of his happiest. The day of the first game of the first World Series for the Cubs in 29 years. And this storyline with the Cubs playing in the World Series goes throughout the entire episode, even though at the time it would in fact been their first time there in that long. But that year they weren't actually in the World Series.
You gotta have something.
Yes. And what Carl wants for something is his ticket to the World Series, which he's supposed to be getting from Mr. Ron Updike, who is now the temporary sports editor. Ron has a different position in the paper every time we see him. He's just the go-to guy to fill in where he's needed.
Well, sometimes you gotta fill around a bit before you find a spot that works for you.
Mm-hmm. He talks about Ron like learning all the stats. He's just going overboard. However, he has forgotten to give Carl the ticket for the World Series game. And why does he owe him one? It's all thanks to roller derby. That's right. Old Ron had some disparaging things to say about Stuffy Petachenko of the Atlanta Amazons. And she was going to destroy him. And Carl talked her down in the trade that Ron would give him a ticket to the World Series. So Carl, in fact, gets this ticket to the World Series, even though Ron is hesitant to give it up. And then as he prepares to leave, he grabs the straw hat we all know and love and gets ready to head out of the newsroom. And that's when we get Mr. Vincenzo, editor-in-chief of the INS, the Independent News Service, coming in hot with a story for Carl. And Carl's like, look, brother, I'm going to go watch some baseball. However, Vincenzo talks about how I guess you have to give it to somebody else. And it's a juicy one about the death of animals at the zoo. So Carl's not to be undone. He tells Tony, well, I got plenty of time before the game. Not a problem. We can check it out. Because the big thing that Carl brings up is that it wasn't one animal. Two different animals have died in two different days at the zoo. And this isn't like just house pets. Mm. These are big wild animals.
Yeah. Because he says, Vincenzo says it was a cheetah. And he says, no, it was a panther. It was last night. And he's like, no, it was another one tonight. So Vincenzo really sets the hook in Carl's not cheap.
Yeah, Carl got not realizing it whatsoever. Yep. And so then we get Carl en route to the zoo. We get a lot of shots of Carl en route to places in his car, listening to the ball game over the radio throughout the episode because he's heavily invested because there's kind of a time crunch on this. You know, he's wanting to get there before the game's too far in. He's listening to the ball game. It's kicking off. And then his police scanner kicks in. Code 5 priority, 201 in progress, Radon Electronics, Commerce and 24th Street. So Carl's like, well, I got time for all of this. I'm Carl Kolchak. What are you going to do? So he takes off to Radon Electronics. And when he gets there, the police have surrounded the building. And about that time, an entire wall, a brick wall of the Radon Electronics building burst outwards into the street, knocking people backwards. We get to see cops flipping over cars. We've got bricks everywhere. Massive wind, but no sound of explosion. A silent explosion from the wall itself, which when initially watching the episode, I thought it was just like a mistake in the sound engineering that they just added too much wind noise and stuff and music. But it turns out that no, that was part of this whole gimmick.
It was intentional, yeah.
Intentional. They all get up and head to the big massive hole in the wall. They're like, what is going on? And there are these two massive piles of lead ingots sitting there on pallets that just fade into nothingness.
Yeah.
Before their eyes, they become empty pallets.
Yeah.
And naturally, police Captain Quill tells Carl to also disappear and has some officers escort him away. And as Carl heads to his car, we get to see our very first glimpse of what can only be described as some G-men, some FBI boys, some government official types, some men in black, not wearing black.
No, I'm driving a little car just to be inconspicuous. Yes.
But you know they're important because the police chief salutes them. So they're there for a purpose, but that's all you get at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so then Carl continues going to the zoo. He stops off. He sees a building explode, and then he heads on to the zoo.
It's average Saturday.
Average Saturday for Carl before heading to the ball game. What are your thoughts on this overall police standoff at Radon Electronics, which when I saw it, I thought it was like an electronics store.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out they like develop electronic weaponry and things, we find out at a later point.
Yeah.
But the building they're at doesn't give me that feeling.
No, it looks like an electronic workshop. Mm-hmm. I will say that watching it at the time, it seemed like nothing was connected. It just seemed like a weird tangent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the police have the building surrounded, and like one's running across the rooftop, and it's because of they think there's a break-in,
right?
And like burglars are still in the building,
right? And I don't think initially. Also, I don't think I really put together that there was wind coming at the cheetah. I thought it was just sort of like just a POV camera getting closer and closer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, but for whatever reason, I just didn't put together that there was wind coming at the cat.
Yeah, it really wasn't. I mean, we kind of get that in the next thing we're talking about. Right. But yeah, it's more of a different
It was
setup.
Intriguing, though. It pulled me in. Mm-hmm. I had no idea where they were going with it.
And then when the wall explodes, the cops are launched.
Yeah.
Some of them over patrol cars.
Yeah, like dozens of feet.
Yeah, like the wind is incredible, like hurricane-level winds knocking these people around.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're back to Carl. He's in the car. He's riding. He's got his ball game on, so he's still thinking about the ball game, but he's going to get to the zoo. However, this time, his radio cuts out for a talk show, another kind of disconnected extra thing. And in this talk show, you've got a caller who calls in and basically complaining about things in the city, and he talks about Mariposa Way in Chicago, that they've been doing road work apparently, and they've left a big pile of asphalt in his yard. He talks about how bad it's tarry and it stinks, and he's wondering why they haven't got it out of there, and he's called down and nobody's saying they're doing any work and nobody's helping him out. And then that's that.
Yeah.
And then Carl makes his way to the zoo.
Yeah, it just kind of fades in the middle of his radio and then fades out back out again.
Yes. I mean, all this stuff connects pretty quickly, but initially it is a lot of disjointed stories.
Yeah.
So Carl shows up at the zoo. He goes to the cage that the cheetah was in. The bars are not only partially missing, but they're bent,
mm-hmm.
like curved inward. And so something incredibly strong has gotten in there to get that cat. And so Carl's taking pictures. And this is the part that kind of throws me off, because he sees this black mass in the hay,
mm-hmm.
and reaches down with a napkin and picks it up. I mean, it could be cat shit.
That's what I thought it was.
But it apparently isn't.
No.
But what it is almost as gross, and we'll find about that as well as we go. Carl, he just takes this black sludge with him. He goes to see the zoo's veterinarian, Dr. Bess Weinstock, who we get from a couple scenes in this. And she tells him that this viscid mass that he has found, the sticky goo, contains a lot of acetone. She believes that vandals intended to foul the entire zoo with this, but were scared off. Which makes absolutely no sense.
The only thing that ties it in is she said that there was an elephant painted gold like the week before.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you're a vandal and you're spray painting an animal, what kind of bastard are you?
You're
terrible.
Yes.
And then moving on to the topic of recent animal deaths, Carl learns that they all died of heart attacks. And there weren't just two. There was a panda, a leopard, a panther, and the cheetah. Four big time animals. Not only that, but we're made sure to find out that pandas aren't actually bears. They are raccoons.
They are.
While Carl is there, learning about the deaths of these animals, which are chucked with a heart attack, which Carl scoffs at, looking at this black slush through a microscope like he would know what any of the things are, he's also making phone calls with numbers he has memorized in his head,
mm-hmm.
not only for city departments, but also for a radio show. And he calls the radio show that he had heard the man talking about the asphalt, which I guess that's where the black sludge that stinks that he's got and that tar comes into play, because he does call the city and they have no record of doing any road work on Mariposa Way. He calls the radio show and they act like that guy never called the radio station at all. And City Hall has no record of any of that. So Carl's like, this makes no sense. I heard this in my car. Something's up. I don't know what it is. It really does make no sense. And so he heads over to check it out. So then we get more of Carl listening to the ball game on a drive in his sweet, sweet Mustang. And he goes to Mariposa Way, and there Carl finds the caller, Alfred Brendel. Alfred Brendel, our big, big guest star of the week, Mr. Dick Van Patten, in a very nice tracksuit.
Yeah, he's very well put together.
He's what you might call a curmudgeon-y complainer.
He's very upset with the neighborhood and the police and just the city in general.
Yes, with a lot of things. Not just the tar, which is aggravating to him, the big chunks of black, gooey, stinky garbage, but the crime. His neighbor, Henry Anscaroni, apparently was upstairs listening to his nice big stereo equipment with his headphones. All of a sudden, somebody came through his window and just jerked the entire stereo out of his house with the headphones on, hurting his neck. And then the cops found the stereo equipment blocks away, destroyed, but they didn't find all of it.
Yeah, it was like gutted.
No trace of the electronics, just like the boxes and speaker boxes, mm-hmm. and stuff. And that's where Carl managed to find some of the quote-unquote asphalt in the yard, and it very much matches the black sludge that he found in the cheetah's cage. So now we're starting to get at least something that's linking together.
Things are coming together.
In his day. There's the robbery and the death of animals are separate, but the black sludge ties them together. So you got
it does. And I guess the electronic shop kind of ties into the radio, but where all that was taken from the electronics place was lead, it kind of didn't tie in together in my head. But the zoo and the
yard. Yeah, there were electronics place. There was theft there. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but the zoo and then the break-in definitely tie in.
But we kind of get a mix of both in the next scene. We get a break from Carl for a minute, and we get back to kind of our usual Night Stalker style action where we see someone being victimized.
Right.
And this one is Mr. Peter Hudson, who we see hanging out, hiding out. He snatches a woman's purse and races down the street around the corner of the block and heads down into like this kind of abandoned building, or what he thinks is abandoned. He starts digging through the purse and he's just finding just nothing, just trinkets, garbage, nothing really to count. He's like, ah, what a waste. And then he looks around him and the entire basement he's in is just packed full of various appliances and electronics, TVs, stereos, kitchen appliances, everything. You name it, it's in there. But as he's looking at things, we get that same image that kind of the cheetah had, where he turns around and you get his face and he screams, but this time you get a lot of the wind noise, and then it fades to black on Mr. Peter Hudson.
Shouldn't have stole that purse.
Shouldn't have stole that purse. And then we flash back to Carl coming back to the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
His day is, there's a lot of road tripping in Carl's day today. Carl's back to the zoo with the vet again, and he's got a sample from the guy's yard. The vet is totally uninterested in comparing these samples for Kolchak. She has just zero time for Carl whatsoever. But eventually she does it because he's just on it and 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 on it. And she reveals that they're the same. Identical. Mm-hmm. Yay, there you go. You thought it was, it was. However, we find out it's a mix of hydrochloric acid, acetone, which she talked about before, and bone marrow, both animal and human. And all the animals killed at the zoo, which she hadn't revealed before, had puncture marks at the major bone joints, and all the marrow had been extracted from their bones. And Weinstock believes that someone ate the bone marrow, then threw up, and this vomit is the black substance. So Carl, all day today, has just been filling his pockets with puke.
Yes. And also, I really liked this character because she just lets the facts lead her to where they're going. And she knows what it is. She knows exactly what it is. But she doesn't want to talk about it because maybe someone's told her not to talk about it. But she does not at all try to be like, well, it looks like this, but it's probably something else. It's probably someone just being vandals and being weird. She's like, no, someone ate the animals.
Yeah, she's like, this is obviously, this would make up vomit in some way.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And so then back at the INS office, we're back in the newsroom, and there's Carl, and the return of Monique.
Back from New York.
Back from New York, like it never happened. Miss Marmelstein on it. And she helps him develop his pictures. She's got some skills. She's doing some work. She's in the dark room developing photos. But they don't really show anything. She thinks there's trash. So she just rips them up and throws them away.
Yeah.
And Carl's like, what? What are you doing? Like, that's not how this works. You don't get to choose what a good photo is. So he orders her to redevelop them. And then he takes off in his car again and heads to the morgue to talk to our old pal, Gordy the Ghoul.
Gordy the Ghoul and his lottery.
And Carl wants an autopsy report on the guard who died at Radine and Electronics. And that was something that we forgot to mention, basically, at this point, that there was a guard that was killed.
Right.
No details on that really were. But, I mean, kind of like to Carl, it was just kind of shoved to the back of all of the info.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And Gordy's about to get it after, you know, he gets more money from Carl for his lottery of corpses, and he's trying to give him numbers. And he talked about how Carl was only one number off. So keep the faith alive because you can win.
And that lottery is the birth date of the deceased.
But we get Mr. Stanley Wiedemeyer coming in, who is Gordy's boss. So Gordy pulls down his lottery paper and is hiding stuff. He's talking to Carl like, I'm not allowed to give you this info. And he's just being overly dramatic about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the head coroner there, he comes in. And obviously, he and Carl, there's some history there. Mm-hmm. But he seems like super happy to give Carl the results of the autopsy, which he does. And they are plain and non-assuming. Subject's name was Lloyd Realm. He was a male Caucasian, 60 years of age, prior history of myocardial infarction, immediate cause of death, cardiac arrest, other autopsy findings unremarkable. He's just like, look, he had a heart attack, done and done.
Just like the animals.
Just like the animals. But Gordy the whole time is just shaking his head no as he stands behind him. And so he shows Carl a cassette, like behind Wiedemeyer's back. And then he just like, Carl goes to open one of the morgue drawers and Gordy goes to stop him and then just like slips the cassette easy to him. And Wiedemeyer's none the wiser.
Nope.
So Carl takes off. But instead of like leaving the building or going somewhere to listen, he just sneaks off into a closet and then just plays it at full volume on his recorder.
Well, Carl's not, for whatever reason, the stealthiest person sometimes.
No. But it's the real autopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the dictated one, and you hear them talking. Although he had a history of cardiac problems, the cause of death was not heart attack. And of particular interest, the marrow in his bones was extracted from at least the ones they were checking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a definite tie to the animals, even more so.
Yep.
Somebody's drinking some bone marrow.
Delicious. You know, it is kind of odd that only the security guard is the one that died. And all those police were thrown through the car window, well, over cars and through the wall and all that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty stout police in Chicago, I think.
Whatever's killing them is taking the time to drink the bone marrow,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, I wonder what the time frame of that is. Because if they found the animals dead, like how long is the patrol security at the zoo? How long was like an alarm or whatever going off for a robbery?
That's true.
You know, was it like super quick just drinking that marrow?
It does this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Does a very good, like, because in the other ones, the Night Stalker, like in the other ones, like the zombie, you know, there's a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
It's out there. It's not really, not that it's not scary, but you kind of know where it is.
Well,
what's going on with it?
Yeah, and Carl figures it out pretty early in the previous episode and then tells everyone what it is, whether you see it or not.
And they don't believe him, but yeah.
Yes.
But in this one, up until the very end, and even still, you don't really know what's going on. And there's a couple of times they're real close to just getting in a lot of hurt and trouble with this thing, like at the electronics place.
Yeah, at this point, Carl has zero idea.
Zero idea.
No idea.
And it's I like it because usually he has all the answers, and this time he has none of the answers.
Yeah, and this one, you're kind of finding it out at the same time he is,
mm-hmm.
which I guess you are overall, but it's taking him a lot longer. From him listening to about the guard's bones, then we get our next victim, which I didn't think was going to be a victim initially whenever I first saw this. September 2nd, 10 p.m., Leon Van Housen, single, ambitious, slightly paranoid. By day, a television repairman. By night, an observer, a man with a purpose. The author of Mathematico, a universal language that Leon has refined for use in an unconventional communication. Unfortunately, on September 2nd at 10 p.m., Leon learned the oldest word in the universal language.
It was screaming.
Yeah, it was screaming.
It was
Yes, this character, Leon, he's got like all this electronic equipment set up, like at a park or somewhere, you mm-hmm. know, near the observatory. He's obviously listening out to the stars, and he's got a mathematical language. I don't know if it was supposed to be binary or what they were saying it was going to be, but there's a way for him. He's going to try to contact extraterrestrials, and then we get the same deal. That first-person camera coming in hot on him, and him screaming, and the wind blowing,
mm-hmm.
fade to black.
And that's actually really smart, too, because if you're going to talk to something from a different planet,
mm-hmm.
math, in theory, is universal.
Yes.
1 + 1 should equal 2 no matter where you're at in the universe. So it's a very smart thing to put into a show like that in the 70s that someone might pick up on and go, yeah, that made sense. And I like details like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was really good. But I thought he was going to be maybe like...
like help out.
A character.
Yeah.
They talk about this Mathematico thing and all, and it you don't... nope. You don't get it at all.
Immediately.
So then we get a thing that we do see in Kolchak the Night Stalker episodes and the movies. The police press conference.
Yep.
And Carl shows up late, per usual. Captain Quill, not very happy, and begins to ask him all kinds of questions about rumors of puncture marks on bodies of the Radon Guard, which, of course, they hadn't got out. So Captain Quill's just like, no, these were rumors, you know. And then Carl starts talking about the lead ingots that disappeared. And he's like, what happened? And Quill's like, what did you see happen, Carl? And then Carl's like, does sound crazy, but, you know, And so Quill then just tells all the reporters the importance of responsible journalism and how you shouldn't alarm the public or erode your credibility. So Carl's just getting browbeaten, basically, at this point.
Yep.
Carl then asks for a link to other thefts of electronic gear, and Quill denies knowledge of any connection in any way. Just makes Kolchak look like a jackass.
Mm-hmm.
And then consults his watch to predict the time of some upcoming arrests, and you see that his watch is stopped at the exact same time that Carl's watch stopped when he looks at his watch, which was the time when the wall burst.
When the wall burst, yep.
And in order to send out an EMP strong enough, an electromagnetic signal, to stop watches, got to be something.
It's something insane.
Yes, but he doesn't know what it is. Something to do probably with Radon Electronics, because they do find out in this press conference that Radon, we find out that they aren't just a repair shop as it looks like they are. Like they actually develop U.S. government weapon systems mm-hmm. and things. So that's why it's classified. He can't even talk about a lot of it. So like he's not completely blocking all the press info, but he's definitely not giving out much.
Right. Yeah. He's like, I can only talk about general stuff because of government contracts.
Carl's answer, of course, to this whole thing about the electromagnetic field is that not only would it be strong enough to stop watches, but it would have to be so strong that it very well might swing a compass needle off of true north to the final truth, which I thought was a good line when he said.
A very good line.
Yes. And basically that talk of a compass is just a MacGuffin for later. It really, but there's no other talk of compasses. But he needs one at the end of the episode.
He needs a way to track it and sort of wrap it up. And that's how they come across it.
So we get back to INS. And this is where it admittedly is weird. Tony is eating a very elaborate dinner being served to him on silver platters by a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out it's a payoff for a bet with the editor from the Times. So he's eating it up. He's enjoying the fruits of his win in all its glory. And Carl comes to talk about vomit and give him indigestion, as Carl does.
Ruins everything.
Carl talks about all the stuff that's going on, and he's still not really sure, but he talks about how gross it is, the bone marrow being sucked out, all that stuff. Of course, Tony's losing. He says he has an iron stomach, but eventually he loses his appetite. It's just too much for him. And after Carl's done his good deed for the day of keeping him from eating, then he goes off to find his pictures, who have supposedly been reprinted.
Mm-hmm.
However, that is not the case. Not the case. He finds out from Monique, who he corners in the bathroom, and does peek over the stall, which I feel like is a poor move on Carl's part.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on, Carl.
But she tells him that she did, in fact, print the pictures. However, some men in suits came down, threatened her over her taxes that she had not filed, and took the photos for themselves. So Carl already finds this to be weird. Are these government people? What's going on? She's asserting that these are officials. So he heads back up to Tony's office. Tony just kind of blows him off and is like, look, Carl, I don't need another UFO story. And Carl's like, I never even said this was a UFO story, because I don't think until this point Carl even thought the word UFO.
He didn't. And also, he didn't just leave. He got the most angry I think I've ever seen Carl Kolchak be.
Mm-hmm.
He punched a box, which isn't a lot, but like in the 70s, it's a lot.
Yeah,
like he's mad that basically the truth is being suppressed. Whatever the truth is, he doesn't even know. He doesn't even know what he lost. But someone came and took it, and he just won't stand for that.
Yeah, and he tells Tony, he's like, oh, these guys in the suits obviously came and took it, because he passes them on their way out. He knows they took the pictures.
Right.
But then when he sees them come out of the INS, he knows that they were in Tony's office.
Right.
And so basically these mysterious men, not wearing black, have his photos and are obviously trying to put a lid on all of these oddly connecting events that Carl's slowly but surely putting together. And thanks, honestly, to these guys, obviously mentioning about a UFO to Tony.
Yeah.
Carl's now got an angle for this.
Yeah, because he was lost.
Totally lost. After that, Carl attempts to find out how you would even report a UFO sighting to the government and finds out that there are no longer any agencies active for that purpose. And in fact, there were, back in the day, things like Project Blue Book, yep, which by the 70s did not exist. But he did find out that they refer people to private groups. So stuff like MUFON, mm-hmm, things like that, NICAP. And he finds out that Leon Van Housen, who was the guy with the Mathematico language, was a member of one such group. So he goes there to check out one of their meetings and see what's going on. They've all supposedly like encountered alien visitors, have seen UFOs, long before the UAP moniker, you know, seeing what they see. And he finds out from this bulletin board that Van Housen had called in an OPUS, a one-person unverified sighting near Snake Rock. The member there talking to him is like, I don't know why he didn't investigate this further because he did have this sighting reported. But I think that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
When he was attacked.
When he was attacked.
He had all his equipment on. He started to talk. And that's about the time that we get this woman who is talking about a semi-sexual encounter she had with an alien. And then starts getting into the destructive nature of wormwood from the Book of Revelations. And Carl, he works his way out of the meeting. He decides to take off.
It's time to go.
Yes. And he heads to Snake Rock, and he does find Van Housen's equipment and Van Housen's body. And he also finds the recording of the last few seconds of Van Housen talking, which is mostly him screaming after he's saying, hey, you know, he's about to talk to him in Mathematico, and then you hear him screaming. You hear the wind coming through the mic. And Carl has a compass. And his theory does seem to be correct because the needle is swinging all willy-nilly.
Weird directions, yes.
And so Carl follows it. All of a sudden, like a big bunch of like wind and noise just rush past him like a train, but nothing there in the woods. And the needle on the compass is pointing that way. And so he follows it.
Yeah.
And where does it take him? To the planetarium.
To the planetarium.
And this is not the final set piece for the episode, but the next part of this in the planetarium is the most important as far as, I guess, finding out more about the thing in general.
It ties sort of everything together, and it gives Carl his final theory as to what's going on.
So we get Carl at the planetarium, and Carl's not in there yet. He's outside of it looking around. And inside the planetarium, the projector that shows the stars up on the big dome ceiling starts to move on its own. And a security guard comes in and he sees it moving. He's like, what's going on? And then there's another security guard sitting in a chair and he goes over to wake him up. He thinks he's sleeping. He's like, what are you doing? There's somebody in here.
Hmm.
The guy's dead.
Gone.
So the guard quickly grabs a phone that he picks up off the receiver and just begins to talk into. There was no dialing. So unless that phone was specifically crafted to connect to the police whenever you lift it up, I got to say they should have took another take on that one.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it's just on the wall in the planetarium.
Yeah, I mean, all he had to do is like spin the dial. I mean,
And it shows these shots of like the dials of the projector, and they're turning.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear this kind of rushing, whooshing noise, and they're turning on their own. You can't see what's doing it. And Carl comes in about this time, and he tries to talk to the guard, who he thinks is asleep as well, and realizes he's dead. That the projector's moving around. He doesn't see anybody at the control box. He sees like a shadow, I guess. But like, and hears stuff, but there's nothing there. And then Carl hears it moving towards him. He hears the wind coming towards him. And you start to get that shot again of like the first person camera coming towards Carl. Like you are the thing coming to get him.
Yeah.
And he pulls out the camera and starts clicking it. And starts shooting his flash, which is flashing away. And it seems to be slowing down. But then the reset for the flash is like a loud buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And when that buzz goes off, the camera pans back and it like escapes back. Ideally behind the panel where it was before. And Carl's just kind of there. And about that time, the police come in. And what do we get? Another shot of Carl with a dead body.
Yep. Two dead bodies.
Two dead bodies. Which he's in this predicament way too often for any man that should be in this predicament that does it somehow end up in prison.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, if he's that annoying to the police, they should just arrest him.
Yes. Yeah. And Captain Quill, he has tons of cops with him. Mm-hmm. Tons.
Yes.
Arguably, way too many. Also, this police captain has been showing up at every scene of every minor incident, which seems odd as well.
Yeah. Way too many police for a dead security guard.
Mm-hmm. So they all fan out, and Carl tries telling him that the light from his camera drove it away.
Mm-hmm.
The big thing here is that the captain is listening to what he is telling him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not blowing it off. He's not like, you're crazy for thinking this is some type of invisible creature. He's kind of going with the flow, which we've not seen from a lot of police.
No.
When dealing with Carl. In fact, none other so far.
None of them, yeah.
Have accepted any of his theories of any kind. Part of it, I imagine, is because when they get there, Captain Quill tells the guys to run over to the control panel and turn on the lights. Get it bright in there so they can see what's going on. When they go to do that, much like at their standoff at the electronics place, they're tossed through the air.
Yeah, like nothing.
Yes. And so once you see with your own eyes that these men are just tossed randomly into the air, that maybe something's up, maybe this light will help them. And Carl's argument is sound. It's that the human eye can only see so many spectrums of light, like infrared, like your infrared.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, I have an infrared camera. Mm-hmm. I can't see infrared light. You know, and so that this creature, whatever it might be, and he hasn't said alien in any way during this entire thing, that maybe it's just in a different frequency of light than what we can witness, which makes it arguably a predator.
Right. Yes.
So Carl versus a predator, much like Danny Glover and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's true.
We got Darren McGavin coming in hot on one of the greatest hunters of the galaxy.
There you
that
go.
Drinks bone marrow. So Carl talks about the lights. The captain's trying to get his guys back. They have a massive like light truck outside. So the police chief or the captain talks about how he's going to go talk to the government men and let them know. He's admitted, like, totally, there's government men here. We've got this truck with these massive spotlights. I'm going to go let them know. We're going to blast it up. So Carl's in there. That thing whooshes past him out through the curtains back towards the police to the outside. By the time Carl works his way out to the front door of the planetarium, it is utter chaos.
Yeah, it's like a natural disaster almost.
Yes. That light truck slipped on its side. It's completely engulfed in flame.
Mm-hmm.
Men are trashed everywhere. There's bodies all over the place. And the captain, not thrilled with Carl, lets him know that the light just irritated it. And that's when Carl figures out that the buzzing of his resetting light is what actually did the noise.
Yep, the noise.
The noise did it.
Captain's not really hearing it at this point, though. He's just done with Carl. He gave him a shot, told him to get out of there.
Yes, yeah, yeah. And he's threatened like to get Carl fired and be done, and Carl just kind of he just disappears into the night.
Yeah.
And he kind of loops his way back into the planetarium to get some photos. And while he's doing that, I guess that's when he discovers the buzzing, because that's when he's taking those photos after this, that he hears the buzzing. And that's when he figures out that high-pitched whine was probably what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So then he goes out to tell the police chief, hey, it wasn't the lights. It was the high-pitched whine. Yes, you're right. Quill's having none of it. And not only that, but that Carl will be dealt with at a higher level than him.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of, you know.
It's not looking good.
No, it's assumed that the FBI guys are going to come for Carl.
Yeah.
And then leaves, takes off. You know, they got other things to do with this, I guess. They're worried about other stuff because it obviously escaped. I mean, there's nothing they're going to do about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
However, Carl pulls out his trusty compass because, as we know now, it throws off true magnetic north enough that it kind of becomes a tracker.
You can follow the compass to wherever the thing is.
Yep. So he starts to spin and he is looking at it. As he's falling, it's spinning so quickly that eventually the glass shatters in the compass. And he's like, oh, shit. So he's looking around all around him. And not far away, we see, I mean, the best prop they've
oh,
had.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
An alien spacecraft in the woods. We're talking full-on UFO.
It's cool looking.
It's very cool looking.
Like, to the point where I almost think it's from a movie.
Yeah, it could very well be. It's from something on the lot that they were able to use. I actually looked for info on that and couldn't find any. So, hey, if any of you listeners know any details about this UFO prop, be sure to hit me up at thekolchaklegacy@gmail.com or, of course, private message on Instagram. Let me know about this thing because I'm genuinely interested on where this prop, whether they crafted it from whatever budget they had, or did they get this from a movie set or a television series, or was this something just sitting around on a back lot that they were able to spray paint up and get ready? But it looks like a million bucks.
It looks amazing. And I guess it doesn't hurt that most of the other Final Confrontations are houses, which makes sense because he does a lot of urban things.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time that you've seen something in the Night Stalker that's undeniably, that has to be an alien. Like,
yes.
You could say, oh, well, the vampire was not really a vampire. He's just pretending. You could say that the zombie was maybe just not a zombie. That's an alien.
Yes, it's an alien spacecraft.
Yes.
Of some, it's an unidentified flying object.
Right.
Assuming it can fly. And Carl gets to touch it.
Yeah.
He tries to open the door, but I mean, he can't. And then Carl's trying to open this door.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets the whirling of the leaves. We get the whoosh of the air. We get the noise. And Carl attempts to hide. However, this thing is coming at him once again in the woods next to his spacecraft. What's he going to do? He starts, of course, pumping that camera, trying to get that flash to go off. And again, he does get it to buzz. And when it buzzes, it backs off. And then we see the door to the spacecraft open up and close. And we see it from Carl's perspective. And you see no creature at all.
Yeah, nothing.
Completely invisible.
Oh. It actually hung open so long. I mean, it wasn't open long.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it hung open like it did, I thought Carl was going to go in.
And then we get the UFO departing.
It's just gone.
It's just gone. It just fades away, much like the ingots.
Mm.
It just...
It was there, now it's not.
Yeah, gone.
Like an extra-dimensional being, maybe.
Yeah. And, like, that's that. Like, that's his... That is his confrontation with this episode's creature. There's no... He doesn't kill it. He doesn't stop it. He just survived it.
And only barely.
And only barely.
Yeah.
Multiple times. And they tried to cover it up, the government, of course, and the city. They tried to make a little park out of the area of the woods near Snake Rock. And the thing is the shape of a saucer, this big circle, nothing will grow there. So they filled it with concrete.
It's such a concrete spot in
just
the middle
concrete,
of the
woods. Just concrete, a big old circle in the woods. And then we get this from Carl. What happened? It's all a point of view, really. A traveler has a breakdown, stops to fix it, get a bite to eat. It's happened to all of us. This traveler happened to be light years off his course instead of miles. As for me... Well, I haven't heard from the boys in the sedan yet. And there you go. Basically, Carl chalks it up, in fact, to just a traveler, whether it be from an inner dimension, from space, that just happened to be here on Earth, needed to fix its ship, needed to eat, obviously, did what it needed to do, and then took off. And it just so happened that Carl just witnessed it, just existed as this was happening. They weren't the main characters in this story, the alien ones.
It'd be like if your car broke down.
Mm-hmm.
And there were ants, and they just happened to be there. The ants have nothing. Like,
and you just ate them.
And, well, yeah, yeah.
You just ate them.
Just ate the ants.
And then you stole their electronics to fix your car.
Well,
I don't know if that's actually a good good analogy or not.
It doesn't work, I guess. But, yeah, like, everybody except for whatever it was incidental. It didn't matter that they were there. They were just food.
Yeah, I mean, this is a true mystery story.
Mm-hmm.
With the supernatural, paranormal, odd twist, high strangeness twist, is definitely not like the previous Kolchak stuff we've seen.
No, it stands out a lot. I think Zombie's still my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
This, though, for going against the formula,
yes,
for not really having an answer, I really like it.
Yes.
I can see people not liking it.
I can, too. I mean, there were times watching it again this time where I'm like, yeah, I can see how this, it's disjointed in a way before the stuff comes together, and it doesn't have that same formula, and that formula does work really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so this one is different, but I think it's a nice little breath of fresh air. Also, as someone who has been involved with like paranormal investigations and just general stuff, I've actually had somewhat of a UFO-ish experience at one time. So, like, it's cool to see, like, an alien episode of Kolchak.
Yeah, but not like, I'm glad they didn't show the alien.
Yes. Yeah.
If they had, it'd have ruined everything.
Yeah, it would have been horrible.
Yeah.
It would have been the worst. Some fun things about the episode. Of course, the title. The title is very non-Kolchak-y as well, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Generally, they're The Zombie, The Ripper. And this one is They Have Been, They Are, They Will Be. And it is a take from a quote from H.P. Lovecraft's Necronomicon in his story, The Dunwich Horror, which is so, so good. And it goes, the old ones were, the old ones are, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces we know, but between them. They walk serene and primal, undimensioned, and to us unseen. Which I feel like fits it really well. However, I don't believe that Carl was dealing with Cthulhu. I think it was just an interdimensional alien or something. But cool nonetheless.
And really, what's the difference to Carl?
Exactly. There's none.
There's nothing.
There's none. Yeah. And like I talked about in the intro, this episode in syndication was known as UFO. Had we turned this on and on the title screen it said UFO, would you have figured it out quicker than its actual title?
I wouldn't have liked it.
Yeah?
I don't think I would have liked it because the title fits it for being weird. It makes you, it's like, well, that title doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show does, the episode doesn't make sense. How things go don't make sense. And then at the end of it, the fact that nothing makes sense, but then the thing gets into a UFO and disappears, that kind of makes it make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But had it just been called UFO,
yes,
then you're just like, oh, this is just aliens doing stuff.
But I also think that like this creature could have just disappeared.
Yes.
And it would have been left even more open-ended. I think you need the UFO to like have some closure to it, but it would have made it much more Lovecraft. Had it just been this weird force of nature doing these things with no control and you just get to witness it and you have to put together whatever you can in your head because it's madness.
There's a version of this episode, I think, where at the end in the park, Carl's popping his camera, and the wind's blowing and he gets the whirling thing to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wind just stops.
And that's just the end.
And it just stops. Yeah. And there's no UFO. And I think that, I don't know how that would go over in the 70s. It probably wouldn't. But
yeah, probably wouldn't.
Like, I think that's a really smart take on it. It's more Lovecraftian, I think. But Lovecraft's not for everybody. And you need a bow on things for an episodic weekly TV show. So the UFO is fine.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to this Kolchak Legacy podcast episode. All you members of the Cult of Kolchak, if you've enjoyed this, be sure to spread the word to all your Night Stalker loving friends. And of course, the goal of the show is to make new fans, people who have never watched the show before, to give it a chance and check it out. And so hopefully you guys are doing that as well. Doing the good work, the work that Carl would so desperately want you to do if he were in fact still, you know, reporting on all the oddities. Be sure to like, follow, rate, review, everything you can do on whatever podcatcher you are listening to this on. And if you would like to hit us up, do so at thekolchaklegacy@gmail.com or thekolchaklegacy on Instagram. We post up there all the time and like to have a lot of fun. We will see you next week for another episode of the Kolchak Legacy Podcast. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to this Super Spectrum Radio production.